Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live here Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you're listening to the podcast version of this show, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you darn well please. Anytime you want to hear the sound of our voice, you can do so by downloading the podcast version of this show anywhere you get your podcasts. Either way, we hope you're having a great day, and we hope we can make it even a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
I often have to fight back the urge to sing the woo-woo in the intro song. So congratulations to me for not actually doing it over the years we've been doing this show.
And I mean, maybe we should do that song at karaoke sometime.
Oh, yeah. That would be a real treat for someone.
Maybe if we do another Sing with Ming during Pensacon next year with our buddy Ming Chen, maybe we can arrange to make that happen.
I did it last year.
I didn't do that song, but I did. Ming made me do Don't You Forget About Me, although he ended up doing it with me, in part because the last time before that I had done karaoke with Ming had been I chanced to be at Chronicon, which is the Kevin Smith convention in Chicago, and they were doing he's like, oh, come, we're gonna do there's a karaoke party after hours, come over the karaoke party. All right, so I did, and I signed up to sing a song. That's the song I signed up to sing. Got up and sang it. Brian O'Halloran pops up and starts doing the backing vocals behind me. And I finished singing, and I say, all right, now we got a special guest coming out, and I'll be doggone if it wasn't Kevin Smith himself. So basically singing Don't You Forget About Me, opening for Kevin Smith.
I think you sent a picture, or I'd heard you mention that to me before. That's such a such a cool experience to have. I haven't heard you sing karaoke still, so the jury's still out on whether or not it sounded good. But I bet it was nice to live it.
I got a couple of songs I do all right with. I mean, that's one of them. Honestly, the one that like always seems to get a big reaction if I do it, and it's been a while. But you're gonna be kind of surprised by this, I think. But I got my Tim Curry kind of down. Sweet Transvestite from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I have knocked a few people's socks off with that one. I'm not afraid to say.
That is something I would pay good money to see you perform, or hear you perform, even if it's just hear you perform.
Yeah,
that's
I will
fine.
Say,
but if I could get you in the full costume,
yeah,
we're all
no,
in.
I will say I'm not doing the costume because I do not have the right body type for that. Let's just say that. Like, if I had the right body type, I'd have no shame about doing it. But my character my characters that I did when I did cast in Rocky Horror were always Eddie and Dr. Scott.
There you go.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, I got the right body type for Meatloaf. I do not have the right body type for basically any other character. And you get away with doing Eddie and Dr. Scott because they're never on screen together. And actually in the original production, in the original play, they were both played by the same actor. And they're supposed to be, you know, familially related. You know, Eddie is supposed to be Dr. Scott's nephew. So it makes sense for them to look like it. It was actually in the original production, it was Meatloaf that played both roles. But then when they did the movie, Meatloaf only played Eddie, and they brought in, what is his name? Jonathan Frid, I believe is his name, that played Dr. Scott. So, and then the last few times that I've done cast, I've only done Dr. Scott. I haven't done Eddie in a long, long time. And the ironic thing is I cannot sing that song.
That's a tough one, I bet.
My voice does not go high enough for Hot Patootie, bless my soul. It just does not. But, you know, when you're doing Shadowcast, you're just lip syncing. So it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine.
I want to get real quick that I met a guy, Cody Longshore, yesterday. Cody Longshore is a stuntman who was Bruce Willis's stunt double in Glass, which was the third in the Unbreakable trilogy. Right. And he also did work with Ryan Reynolds in Project Adam, or the Adam Project or whatever. So he's a local guy, ended up doing stunts in a bunch of movies. It was nice to meet him, and I just wanted to shout him out in case he's checking out the radio show this week.
Nice. That's cool. We've talked on the show before about how we think the stunt workers are kind of unsung, and we're going to see a change with that. We're going to see an Oscar for stunt coordination coming up here in a couple of years. I noticed that, you know, the Emmy nominations just came out. There's Emmys for stunt coordination as well. So I'm glad we're starting to see more recognition for that part of the business, because it is an important part of the business. So yeah, nice to see, you know, the Lee Majors song from the original Fall Guy TV show is not going to necessarily hold true anymore. You're not going to be the unknown stuntman anymore.
Yeah, that is a positive change, but there's some other changes going on in the world of entertainment and television in particular that I think you wanted to kind of address before we get into the main crux of the show.
Yeah, and the main crux of the show, I think, will, you know, talking about stunt workers does kind of dovetail into that as well. But before we get into that, the big news that just dropped in the last couple of days that CBS is ending Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and let's be clear, they're not firing Stephen Colbert and getting a new host. They're just ending the show entirely. So this is the show that started with David Letterman after David Letterman left NBC over the whole Tonight Show succession deal. David Letterman came and started this franchise, and when Letterman retired, Stephen Colbert was hired to take over the role. He's been doing it for about 10 years. So this is a show that's been around since, what, I think the early 90s?
99.
Maybe? Was it that late? No, it has to be.
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't think it was that late. I thought it was earlier than that. But
I wouldn't have known had I have not seen something about it this morning. I might be a year or two off, but it was right around 2000.
Yeah. I didn't think Carson stuck around that long. Like, I thought it was like midnight, but that's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is, this is a show that's been around for a few decades, and it is, you know, the first of the late night talk shows to just go. I mean, of the 11:30 Eastern, 10:30 Central talk shows to go away, because of course we had late show with James Corden that had been through a few hosts over the years. That ended when Corden left. They replaced it with At Midnight. Then Taylor Tomlinson decided she didn't want to do that anymore, so they just scrapped that. And now CBS is just apparently scrapping late night altogether. I don't know if they're going to put something else on in that time frame, some kind of other programming, but there will not be a late night talk show on CBS anymore. And there's
1993, Julio. You were correct. Sorry about that.
Yes. So yeah,
it's kind of the end of an era.
Yeah, it really is, and it, you know, it makes you wonder. You know, the CBS has put out a statement saying this has nothing to do with anything else going on in the world, and it's just a financial decision.
I believe it.
I find that a little sus when Colbert has been actively critical of the fact that CBS and Paramount just paid a huge settlement to the president of the United States over something that, according to most experts, is regular, just general, everyday news reporting procedure, because the president was threatening to block this merger that's going on between Paramount and Skydance. So, you know, they pay this settlement, you can call it whatever you want, and I'm not getting into the politics of all that, but then a couple of days later, they end the show of the guy who was A, critical of that settlement, and B, has been critical of the president. It just looks bad. And maybe it really is what it is, but it doesn't look good. And it's either way, I have no doubt Stephen Colbert is going to land on his feet. He's hugely talented. Somebody's going to snatch him up, whether he does another talk show or whatever he does. We have not seen the last of Stephen Colbert. I have no doubt of that. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we promised you last week that we were going to give a week, and then we were going to get in depth on the new movie Superman, which I have just been so excited to talk about on the air. I feel like I have spent the last week talking about this movie, so I have a lot of thoughts that I feel like I'm practiced and ready to go on this movie because I've spent the last week talking about it on the internet. First of all, just very broadly, I'm not going to throw it to you here. I'm going to go first because I think I had a higher opinion of this movie than you did, and I just want to get it out there that I loved this movie. And the more time I spend thinking about it, the more I love it. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's the best superhero movie of all time. I'm not even saying it's the best James Gunn superhero movie. But I really loved it. I really feel like it got to the spirit and the heart of every character in the movie that has been pre-established in comics. These felt like the characters that I know and love. And that in and of itself is reason enough to love this movie. Like that's my hot take here. I love this movie because it is one of the most iconic depictions of every single character in this movie. That's my hot take. What's your hot take, Jeremy?
Yeah, I love it. I thought the movie was really good. When I was looking at the trailers, I was concerned for two reasons. For one thing, I was concerned it was a little hyper-focused on catering to fans of DC Comics, which I wouldn't consider myself one, and it's not that I'm not a fan of what they do. I'm sure the comics are great. I just didn't grow up collecting them, so a lot of the stuff in the trailers didn't exactly resonate with me. So that was one thing. The other thing I was concerned with is that despite the fact that I love James Gunn, he has a formula when it comes to superhero movies. I mean, whether we're talking Guardians Volume 1, 2, or 3, whether we're talking Peacemaker, The Suicide Squad, or even more recently Creature Commandos, we know what James Gunn can do well. He can take the morally dubious characters, the characters that are kind of jerks and self-centered, and turn them into a family unit that's like cohesive and loving despite the fact that they're dysfunctional. But there's always this like edginess to them and this snarkiness to them. And we knew he could do that, and there was a lot of that in the trailer with the Justice Gang. But what I was not sure about, and I'm happy to report that he did it fantastically, is give us a version of Superman that could exist within that world without compromising what I would think of as Superman. And for the first time in my life, I walked out of a movie being like, I think I get it. I think I see what it is that people love about Superman. And that I think is the film's biggest success. Like you said, I don't think it's perfect, but the fact that I did feel that it made Superman accessible and relatable and human was one of the film's greatest strengths.
Yeah, I can't agree with that more. And I think that you're right that Gunn has some tactics that he falls back on a lot. And I think that some of those things are in here to some extent. I think the Justice Gang was kind of his outlet for that, you know, that found family kind of outcast kind of, you know, situation. But we don't really see them together that much, and we don't really see them, like, where we see their personalities is more with their interactions with Superman and or Lois and less with each other.
Absolutely.
Like there's a one scene in the middle where all three of them are together kind of hanging out, and Lois shows up, which is a great scene. And I guess, you know, Superman is a character that could kind of lend himself to that because Superman is, in a way, an outsider. You know, he is a guy that, you know, he's an alien. He came from another world. He, you know, but this movie chooses, and this is something that James Gunn has said in so many words, so it's not a take that I just came up with on my own, although I think it's obvious to anybody that sees the movie, that is emphasizing the man over the super.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this guy is, and we'll get into spoilerific details about all of this. This guy is who he is because of how he was raised. Because of the family that took him in and raised him as a human, this salt of the earth couple from the Midwest, they made him who he is. It is the nature versus nurture argument, basically, writ large. And it's funny because I know we've had this discussion before. I know I've talked about this on air before, and I have felt like that has been the heart of, in my opinion, what was wrong with the entire previous iteration of DC films, the entire DCEU, Snyderverse, whatever you want to call it, is founded on the rock of Man of Steel, Zack Snyder's Superman movie. And all of that is predicated on, to some extent, Zack Snyder's personal philosophy of the world and his, you know, Christian Scientist upbringing and his affection for objectivist philosophy and, you know, all of that, you know, the Ayn Rand and all of that. But it's reflected in the way he created his Superman, and his Superman is reflected in the way he created his Jonathan Kent. And that Jonathan Kent, played by Kevin Costner, is a very different Jonathan Kent than the one in this film. And the one in this film is the one that is the reason the character has been who he has been for 80 years, shy of those movies and a couple other, like, alternate universe takes on Superman over the years.
Like, you know, to that, I think it's important to point out that I think that same truth applies to every creator, whether they be writers, filmmakers, that's ever had their own run in a comic series. And I'm not objecting to one over the other. I think that each is valid, and while they might have differences, I mean, every iteration of Spider-Man is slightly different from another.
Oh, sure.
So I wouldn't say that it's... I don't think that you have to write off one to like the other. And I think that that has been a big point of contention with this new Superman movie, is that it's this or this, and that both can't just occupy their own space.
And I really
want to live in a world where they can.
I think that's something that Gunn himself has tried to shy away from. Like Gunn, I mean, Zack Snyder and James Gunn are friends. Zack Snyder and James Gunn have worked together before. You know, in my opinion, Zack Snyder's best movie, which is the, 2014, am I right? 12?
2004, I think.
2004, is that far back. But the remake of Dawn of the Dead that Snyder directed and Gunn wrote, I think is a fantastic horror movie. In fact, next week on the show, we're going to be talking about the best horror movies of the past 25 years, 25 of 25. I think, you know, I'm not sure if that ended up making our list or not, but it was definitely one we discussed when we were coming up with that list. So, you know, it's, I think Zack Snyder is a good filmmaker. I think Zack Snyder is an incredible visual stylist. I think there is room for a world where that Superman exists. And I'm not necessarily 100% convinced that we've seen the complete end of that world.
Interesting.
And that's something we'll talk about a little further into the show. But I do feel like, yeah, that's a Superman, but it's not the platonic ideal of a Superman.
Sure.
You know, it's
more importantly, not your favorite version of Superman.
It's not the iconic version of Superman. That's what I'm looking for here is, like, give me these characters in a way that I can recognize them. They are in their, like, most iconic form. And I think, you know, to a large extent, Christopher Reeve was that. I think to a large extent, Brandon Routh was that in a movie that was, in fairness, was not that great, but that wasn't his fault. And I mean, yeah, he was asked to kind of basically play Chris Reeve, but he did a great job at it. I think that the there have been a number of animated series over the year that have gotten the character. I mean, definitely the, if nothing else, the Superman, the animated series, and the following Justice League / Justice League Unlimited. I think that that show maybe has been the most pure iconic versions of just about every character in the DC universe. But I think that this is in there. I think that I did not remember at any time that I was watching David Corin sweat. I was watching Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that way about most of the characters in the movie. I mean, you know, and I'm harping on Superman because that's the movie. Superman is the movie. He's the main character. He's on screen for, what, 85% of the runtime? I mean, there's a few scenes with Lois and a couple other characters where Superman's not in the scene, but not many.
Yeah.
You know, as well it should be. You know, everybody, you know, there was a lot of concern about this movie being possibly overstuffed with too many characters. And, you know, Gunn made a comment of like, yeah, look, there were twice as many speaking roles in Oppenheimer. And and nobody got lost there, and nobody got lost the, you know, the point of that the movie was Oppenheimer. And I think, you know, I don't think he was comparing himself to Chris Nolan, but I think that he achieved that just as well as Chris Nolan did. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Sun shining down over me and you, and there'll be love in the bodies of the elephants too. And I'll put my hands over your eyes, but you'll peek through, and there'll be sun, sun, sun all over our bodies, and sun, sun, sun all down our necks, and there'll be sun, sun, sun all over our faces, and sun, sun, sun. So what the heck, 'cause I'll be laughing at all of your silly little jokes, and we'll be laughing about how we used to smoke all those stupid little cigarettes and drink stupid wine, 'cause it's what we needed to have a good time. But it was fun, fun, fun when we were drinking. It was fun, fun, fun when we were drunk, and it was fun, fun, fun when we were laughing. It was fun, fun, fun. Oh, it was fun.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We're talking about the new movie Superman, directed by James Gunn, that just came out a little over a week ago. And we've been hitting the, you know, James Gunn is kind of known for his needle drops in his movies, and he mostly stayed away from them in this movie. But there were a couple of songs in the movie, and really two of them were really just over the end credits, in fairness. There's only one thing that you could term a needle drop in the movie, and that's that song that you just heard, 5 years time. And it does start out, in fairness, as diegetic music in the scene, but it goes into one of the most epic fight scenes in the movie. And it's funny because it's the only one that doesn't actually involve Superman. It has to do with one of the breakout characters in the film, I think, and one of the ones that I've definitely heard people talking about the most this week, and that's Mr. Terrific. So, Jeremy, I'm going to assume that's a character that you want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And we did talk a bit about the Superman of it all, but there is a big supporting cast in this, varying degrees of, like, recognition, right? Like, we all know Lois, and we all know Lex, and to a lesser degree, people know Guy Gardner, and people know maybe Hot Girl. I wasn't familiar with Mr. Terrific prior to this movie, and I do think that he is a representation of what James Gunn does really well, and it harkens back to Polka Dot Man in The Suicide Squad, in that he took a character that maybe isn't known to mainstream audiences and just says, like, this is what makes this character awesome to me, and shows it to the world, and then everybody's like, yeah, that is pretty awesome, actually. I like that. The scene reminded me a bit of when Yondu does the arrow whistling bit in Volume 2 of Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. kind of like a showcase of his powers. And I really did like that scene. It is James Gunn definitely kind of operating in his wheelhouse.
I feel like we got, I feel like that was the best of those scenes, but we got little scenes like that for pretty much all of the major supporting characters. You know, we got, Guy Gardner has a couple of moments in this movie, but I think the iconic one comes late in the film when he's, with a wave of his hand taking out a bunch of tanks and, in his own inimitable style that I won't spoil for anybody. But that I thought was just one of the funniest things in the movie. And just so on brand for Guy Gardner for that character. If you don't know this character, Guy Gardner is a Green Lantern. You I'm sure are familiar at least superficially with who the Green Lantern characters are, the Green Lantern Corps. But he's like, if you need the help and you need help from a Green Lantern and he was the one that showed up, you'd be like, really? Like he's a jerk, but he's kind of a lovable jerk. And I think just Nathan Fillion plays that so well. But you got that scene with him. You got maybe a little less with Hawk Girl. Hawk Girl is the character that maybe is the biggest cipher out of every character in the film. But there's just enough of her in there to kind of get a feel for who she is. And again, there's something big during the climax that really shows that. Metamorpho gets his chance to showcase his powers as weird and awesome as they are. And that's a character that I really love. So seeing him in this movie, getting to be the same freak he's always been. And that's something he would call himself. That was just so good. But we see it with the characters on Lex's side too. We get to see the engineer showcase who she is. We get to see Ultraman. We get to see, an Ultraman maybe is one of the only things that I'm maybe a little bit negative on, and that I just thought it was really obvious what that character was, and they could have gone a different route with it, and maybe they're going to go a different route with that character in the future. There's certainly a lot of people that think that character is set up for another very famous character in the Superman mythos. And if that's the way they're going, I'm here for that. But that reminds me.
I assume you don't want to bury the lead on that, so we'll keep it vague. I didn't really like the way that it was handled as far as Lex's big master plan. But that's a conversation you and I'll have a different time. But I want to know what your take on the big characters are. So, like, first of all, Nicholas Holt might be seen as kind of a departure from what people would expect from a Lex Luthor. What did you think about this version of the character?
Again, I think this may be in live action, definitely the best Lex Luthor we've ever seen.
Can I say, when I think of Lex Luthor, I think of genius as like the very first descriptor word for mm-hmm. him, at least historically.
Sure.
And when I think of this version of Lex Luthor, and I love it, I think it's awesome. But the first descriptor I would give for him is petty. And to me, that is a slightly different version of the character than what I would expect.
I think petty is a core characteristic of Lex Luthor. I think he is absolutely avaricious and petty to the core. And I think that's what separates him from being like, this is a man who is possibly the smartest man on Earth. Definitely one of the three smartest men on Earth. He could be a boon to the entire world, but because of his jealousy and because of his pettiness, he's a bad guy because he allows his obsession with anybody getting more attention than him to blind him from, he's that much of a narcissist. Like if you're not paying attention, there's one scene where he outright says it. They chose him over me. Let them die.
Uh-huh.
That's the core of who Lex Luthor is. And I think
this really fun meta aspect to it, where Nicholas Holt was actually up for Superman and Batman at different times, or at least in consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the fact that he probably was able to let out some of those feelings that he internalized in a way that works within the context of the character adds this extra little bit of sauce to it that I really liked.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can make some allusions to some real world figures with him as well, which is something I think that, again, I think that Zack Snyder's tried to do with Jesse Eisenberg's version of Luthor. And mm-hmm. I just think that Gunn is more successful with it.
All right. What about Lois Lane, Rachel Brosnahan?
Just perfect. Just
right.
Absolutely perfect in every way. And again, probably the best live action Lois Lane we've seen.
When the casting was announced, that was the one that to me was like just the most bullseye. Like, of course, Rachel Brosnahan, she would be the perfect Lois. And I think she does a really good job in this movie. And while there's not a lot of Clark in this movie, this is something that I've heard other people say, I push back on that notion.
Oh, I do too.
Because there's the interview scene between Clark, Superman, and Lois. And it's in the trailer, so it's no big spoiler. But what I love is it is Clark trying to reconcile who he is, this kind of himbo farm boy who grew up this really like virtuous guy, but will just like rush into these conflicts without really like thinking through the greater ramifications. And then trying to also portray this larger than life heroic character that is Superman. And to me, all of the Clark and Superman that you need are in that one scene.
Well, and I will say this. I disagree that you don't see much Clark in this movie, because I don't think that Clark and Superman are two different people in this version.
Agreed.
Of the character.
Yep.
I think Clark is Superman. I don't think Superman is Kal-El. I think Superman is Clark and Clark is Superman. And I think at every time you see this character on screen, you're seeing Clark Kent, because that is who this person is at his core.
That's kind of the thing about superheroes, is the idea that they are two separate identities. That's the facade. Like, they really are one person in the middle of those two identities.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on which character you're talking about. I think with Batman, the notion that Batman is the real person and Bruce Wayne is the facade, I think there's some truth to that. But I mean, this guy is who he is. And it goes so mm-hmm. far to the extent of that it's heavily implied throughout the movie that lots of people either know, or that he's just not fooling anybody. I mean, we know the Justice Gang knows who he is. That's revealed. It's heavily implied that Luthor has figured it out. It's heavily implied.
Did you take it that way?
Yeah, I did. And I even more so, I think Perry White and Jimmy Olsen have figured it out too.
Interesting.
I think there's a little notion. And I like that. Like, I think the hypno glasses thing is just kind of a joke.
Yeah, I got a kick out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. It was great. I kind of love the idea, with the possible exception of the journalistic ethics questions that it brings up, that that Perry knows, you know.
Yeah.
And because I do think Perry White would have a problem with that. But that's something that comes up in the course of the movie, too. We're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
1, 2, 3, 4! We're on a planet of our own that we made from the bones of the ones that we KO.
Oi, oi, oi!
Gonna dig an early grave for the daughters and the prey, done with those depressing days.
Oi, oi!
Gonna take this, ain't gonna take this. I am a alien, the new rebellion.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. And, you know, Lois is wrong. The Mighty Crab Joys don't suck.
That was so good.
Although I can also understand why Lois would think they do. Like, again, it gets into the characters being who they are. Like, that, I could totally see that being the bone of contention between this version of Lois and this version of Clark, is the fandom of that made up band that was made up for the movie. The song is done by a real band called Foxy Shazam, along with the weirdly enough, the daughter of the co-producer of this movie, Peter Safran's daughter, is doing the lead vocal on that. But it's meant to be like a really poppy pop punk song. And that's what it is. And there's a great scene in this movie. And I honestly think everybody has been going on about the interview sequence with Lois interviewing Superman. And it's a great sequence. But I actually lean more towards the other scene between Lois and Clark, where they're talking about their relationship and where it's going and who they are. And they're talking about, Lois is talking about how she was a punk rocker. And did I ever think in my lifetime that I was going to see Lois and Clark talking about what is and what isn't punk? No. Did it work? Absolutely. Like the core of, you know, Superman saying, well, maybe kindness is the new punk rock. Kind of is. In this world that we live in right now.
Yeah, like, at least like, in Clark's understanding of what punk would be, because he is, and I love this too. I think what you're talking about is an amazing scene, but like, he is ultimately a little naive, and for the better. Like, that is such a good thing, to put empathy and kindness ahead of logic and geopolitics and everything else. Like, at its core, it is a movie where just the simple act of kindness is like this radical thing that people just have a hard time understanding. And is that the true nature of punk? I don't know. But the fact that Clark believes that it is absolutely moving.
I think that given where we are in the world right now, kindness is about the most anti-establishment thing there is.
Sure.
We're very short on kindness in the world right now. And I'm saying that without getting political. Like, I'm not, you know, pointing my finger at one side or the other here. I'm just saying in general, the world is pretty cruel right now. And in the face of cruelty, when cruelty is the establishment, what's more anti-establishment than kindness and compassion and, you know, being the guy that wants to save everybody, like even a dog that he doesn't really care for that much,
that was another great scene when he was like, I don't know, but he's out there and he's probably scared. Yeah. And I was just like, oh man, that just hit for me.
When you're in the middle of a battle with a giant monster in the middle of Metropolis and you stop to save a squirrel.
Uh-huh.
That, again, you know, we talk about the iconic nature of these characters. That's who Superman is for me, man.
That, he also straight up punched the clone into a black hole, presumably killing him instantly, but we won't nitpick.
Well, yeah, but...
But...
I think you're not wrong there, but I think that is kind of... And this is not a pun based on the fact that he was cloned from a part of Clark's hair, but it's kind of splitting hairs.
Absolutely. But that's the kind of thing that we as fans do. And to your point, and I hate to moralize, but this is where I'm going to get on my soapbox and say, like, if you're a Superman fan and you love this 2025 version and you're on social media and somebody says they didn't care for it, don't attack them. That's not the Superman thing to do. You know what I mean? Just like, let people have their own thing. And I feel like a lot of those people have been so beat down by people telling them they were wrong for the thing that they liked. And it made them reactionary and it made them act maybe not properly a lot of the times, but in the spirit of empathy, just it's okay to have difference of opinion, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, not everything's for everybody, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, where I have a problem is with when you denigrate something sight unseen and you don't give it a chance.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. A couple of things I want to hit on before we run out of time here. I mentioned earlier in the show that I'm kind of questioning whether we have seen the complete and total end of the old DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets summed up in a couple things that we see in this movie. We see this pocket dimension that is a space between two dimensions. So there's other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a multiverse. We see that there are some characters in this. Primarily, we see a cameo from our good friend John Cena showing mm-hmm. up as Peacemaker, who is a character that started out in the DCEU and is the same character in the DCU, sort of. But we've also seen a trailer for season two of the Peacemaker show that clearly is going into this pocket dimension thing and running into an alternate Peacemaker. So I think there's going to be some kind of explanation of why some things seem to have carried over and some things haven't.
Is that what Crisis on Infinite Earth was?
I mean, eventually, yeah, but I don't think we're anywhere near that.
No. But if that was like a culmination type thing, that would be kind of according to that story.
Could be. Yeah, could be.
Cool.
So I'm not necessarily convinced we've seen the end of every element of the old DCEU, and not just because Gunn is using some of the same actors. So we'll see. We'll see what comes of that. But I think that's interesting. The other thing that I want to hit on is where we're going from here. You know, the next thing we are going to see is Peacemaker season two.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that we're going to see some characters from this movie in that series.
At least Rick Flagg, for sure.
We're going to see Rick Flagg Sr., for sure, Frank Grillo's character, who was also in Creature Commandos. We are definitely going to see Guy Gardner and Hawk Girl.
Oh, cool.
And Maxwell Lord, who's barely in this movie, but he's a presence and he's mentioned. Because we've seen in that trailer that we've seen for Peacemaker 2, they're in that trailer. So we know we're going to see them. We're not 100% sure whether Mr. Terrific's going to be in there too or not, but in some form, we're going to see at least some of the Justice Gang.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the next thing. We're not that far away from it. It's coming up next month.
Awesome.
So looking forward to that. But then we got a little cameo at the not in a post-credit scene, but like in the actual meat of the movie. Little cameo at the end of this movie introducing another character who's going to get her own movie next year. And that's Supergirl.
Yeah.
What did you think of Millie Alcock as Supergirl?
I was such a big fan of Millie Alcock from season one of House of the Dragon, and to the point that I was a little resistant to the recasting for the first couple of episodes of it. Suffice it to say, I'm a big fan of her. When I found out she was actually cast to play Supergirl, I was interested in it. After seeing Clark's relationship with Crypto and then this little tease of her at the end, I can't wait to see what they do with her and how she is, surprisingly to me, such a different character from Clark Kent. So I'm literally really looking forward to what comes next from this studio, which is a cool place to be because for a long time I was not interested. And this is like the shiny new shared universe thing, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah, where I'll say, I think, you know, justifying Supergirl is, Supergirl needs to be her own character. She needs to not mm-hmm. just be female Clark. And that's been an issue with the character over the years where there's been too many times where she's just female Clark. And
yeah.
You got to remember that the main difference between Kara and Clark is Kara was old enough to remember Krypton when she left. Clark was a baby. Kara was a teenager. Mm-hmm. She remembers, you know, her parents. She remembers her life on this other world. And this is a character that not only lost her entire world, but then there was a small group of survivors. She watched all of them die. And then the few of those that lived had to watch all of them die too. So she's been through a lot of trauma. So yeah, there's a reason she's a hot mess. And this movie is going to be about her, you know, overcoming that. And I think that's really interesting, and I'm really, really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to the fact that this seems to be a universe where we're going to be able to have different tones, and we're going to be able to have some fun, but we're also going to be able to have some darker stuff, and we're going to be allowed to have a wide universe that doesn't just have one style to it and encompasses a lot of different things that can still coexist. And I think that that is something that if I was to criticize Marvel right now, that they've gotten away from. So, you know, I'm eager to see what a cohesive universe that allows for different artistic visions is going to look like. I think the Lantern series, which we will see also Guy Gardner back in, is going to be another place where we're going to see a big shift in that. There's already talk about a Mr. Terrific series too, which I think everybody is here for after that movie. And there's talk about a Jimmy Olsen series. So
I'm on board for that.
Which we didn't even really get to talk about F-boy Jimmy Olsen, which was funny. Super fun too. But we're out of time. We will be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.